Sonny Murray Leinster. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Sonny. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook title. Sonny author, Murray Leinster, release date, August 9, 2026, ebook 79317. Language, English, original publication. New York, NY, Doubleday, Page & Co., 1926, other information and formats. www.gutenberg.org/ebook/79317 credits. Prepared by volunteers at Book Cove, Book Cove. Net asterisk start of the project GUTNBRGEBOOK Sonny asterisk. Sonny, by Murray Leinster, author of Fog. Sagebrush slings the bull, etc. Gunpowder was a specialist in concentrated helliousness, the type of outlaw horse that could buck and whirl on a quarter and have 20 cents left over. In the long search which lay ahead of him, Sonny Homan needed just such a fiery mount, so in payment he embarked upon a dangerous duty for the sheriff of Helada. Sonny Homan was worth $1,000 to anybody in Helada on the morning he rode in, whether they got him dead or alive. But nobody seemed to know it. He thought he was ahead of the alarm for him, so rode on to where he saw something like a crowd. There was a black and white horse fighting like a fiend to dismount his rider in the center. Sonny looked at the horse and stiffened. Then he rolled a cigarette and watched the battle. All the town was watching, apparently. The fight was taking place in the small corral attached to the livery stable, and there were quite 40 citizens leaning against the corral rails or perched on other points of vantage. The man on the horse was beginning to weaken before Sonny rode up. As Sonny struck a match to light his cigarette, daylight showed underneath the rider. When Sonny had taken his first puff, the rider grabbed wildly for the horn of his saddle. When Sonny drew his first inhalation, the rider lost a stirrup. Sonny's discarded matchstick and the rider of the black and white horse struck the ground at the same time. A yell went up from the onlookers. The black and white horse whirled and reared up to come down with sharp four hoofs upon the fallen man. A lariat fell across its head, and the man on the ground rolled out of the way at the same instant. A moment later, the horse was being dragged across the corral, fighting madly every foot of the way, and the man on the ground had struggled to his feet and was limping to the gate. "That's a right nice hoss," observed Sonny. "Nice hoss?" queried a citizen by the corral gate. "He's hell on wheels with all kinds of equipment. Nobody ain't rid him yet," said Sonny reflectively. "What might you folks call him?" the citizen spat. "His official name," he stated, "is Gunpowder, but I'm inclined to think that buck yonder is calling him something different." The limping man came out of the gate rubbing his shoulder. Sonny surveyed him thoughtfully. "That your hoss, brother?" he asked. "Not much," rasped Buck. "If I own the devil, I'd fill him so full of lead he'd have tea, use a block and tackle to hoist his tail for a fly, flap." "I'd admire," said Sonny tentatively, "to try forkin' that animal. He had a trick or two I ain't seen before. There was a kind of shimishy wobble in the middle of a steamboat turn that looked right intricate." "Go ahead," snapped Buck. "I bet your regular money why don't stay on as long as I did." "No," said Sonny sorrowfully. "I ain't got any widow for you tea collect from if I was to lose." He slipped off his own pony and went over to the horse. He seemed wholly at ease, but he was acutely aware of each glance that was bent upon him. When one is badly wanted, even if one is ahead of the news, caution is desirable, especially when honor likewise is at stake, but nobody showed anything but curiosity. Gunpowder had been blindfolded now to be edged into the stable. Sonny stopped the two men who were handling him. No more than half a dozen words and he was granted a free ride, with smothered grins at his apparent confidence. "Want why own saddle?" queried one of the men at Gunpowder's head. "That one's on tight," said Sonny. "Let her go." The men jumped back. Nothing happened. Sonny sat upon the most placid of horses, one which gazed curiously around at the men watching it. Sonny puffed twice and then ran a caressing hand under its mane. "A lil action, Gunpowder," he suggested mildly. Without warning, Gunpowder exploded. He bucked and at the same time spun around like a pinwheel. He made half a dozen monster leaps, landing stiff-legged from every jump. He whirled and stopped short with a jerk. He plunged full speed for the opposite side of the corral and five Yards from the fence dug his hoofs into the ground and slid. His object was to shoot Sonny over his head either above or into the corral fence. He failed. Sonny stuck like a leech, and to add insult to injury, slapped Gunpowder's flank with the palm of his hand. Gunpowder shook himself, walked deliberately to the center of the corral, again, and without warning became a veritable tornado. He bucked, he plunged, and in the middle of a plunge, he bucked again. He fought like a demon, desperately, fiercely, infuriatedly. For a good 3 minutes not, one of the onlookers saw Gunpowder as anything but a whirlwind of horse in the middle of a cloud of dust. Buck after buck, jumping with his back, arched, everything in the line of plain and fancy devilishness that long experience could suggest were exhibited in quick succession, and daylight had not yet appeared between Sonny and his saddle. Gunpowder was panting now. A very few minutes of such battling as he had been doing will wear out any horse. He began to gasp a little. Sonny touched him with the spur. Gunpowder seemed to go mad with rage and determination, bucking, plunging, everything the mind of a horse has yet conceived in the way of wickedness. Suddenly he plunged for the fence. Sonny lifted his right leg to avoid being scraped off, but instead the black and white horse flung himself down and rolled up flat to the fence. It was deliberate and it was devilish, an attempt to crush the man against fence or earth with Gunpowder's full weight. Sonny jumped just in time, but he had to make it across Gunpowder, upturned belly to escape. He sprawled on the ground, and when he got up, there was a nasty cut on his forehead from a plunging hoof. "Hold on there," he snapped. Men were running with lariats and one or two with poles. "I'm tendin' to this here." As Gunpowder struggled to his feet again, Sonny leaped upon him, and his face was no longer pleasant, but definitely grim and determined. Now he was not content to let Gunpowder wear himself out. He fought the animal with cold determination. "Naughty lil' son of a gun," he said grimly when the bucks had lost their first energy. "A lil' more action, Gunpowder," he touched his spurs in. The horse was galvanized into a fresh and frantic outburst. When he slackened, Sonny spurred him again. And again, and again he forced the wearying animal to battle until at last horseflesh could stand no more. Gunpowder was defeated. He stood with hanging head, exhausted and beaten, and Sonny slipped rather stiffly from the saddle and went around to his head. "Doggone," he said admiringly. "Gunpowder ain't no name for you. You're dynamite from now on, and sayeth no man to the contrary. Who owns this critter? I'm aimin' to buy him." There had been one man watching, standing apart from the others. He came forward now, and Sonny saw a bright metal star on his shirt. Sonny's right hand fell inconspicuously to his side, hard by his six gun. There was $1,000 reward for Sonny, and he meant to be careful. For the time it would take to locate a man he once foolishly had trusted, he intended to remain at large. "I own him," said the sheriff curtly. "Maybe we can make a deal." "How much?" asked Sonny. He watched alertly, without seeming to be on guard. "The price is 300, said the sheriff shortly, "but he ain't for sale for cash. Can you shoot?" "I've pulled a trigger now and then," admitted Sonny. The sheriff turned to regard the group who had been watching the taming of Gunpowder. His eyes met emptiness. Every man had walked away. Several could be seen turning into the Jackrabbit Saloon. The sheriff turned back with a grim smile. "The law, you might say, ain't especial popular right now in Helada," he observed. "All my deputies got shot or run away. And I need one or two that can ride and shoot. Stick with me a month, and if you ain't perforated, I'll give you the hoss. I can't ride him." Sonny, for whom a reward of $1,000, dead or alive, had recently been posted, Sonny, who had ridden into this town liable to find his picture posted on the nearest fence, frowned thoughtfully. To occupy his hands, he started to roll a cigarette. But it is not every wanted man who is offered a job enforcing the law. And besides, Gunpowder was a horse, a real horse such as every man hopes to find and few men come across. "You'll probably be plugged inside of a week," said the sheriff curtly. "But I seen promise ya some action. What say?" Sonny licked his cigarette and nodded. Somewhere in this region there was a man who earnestly hoped not to meet Sonny. The latter approved of a chance to search and likewise hide out from those who sought him as a limb of the law. "I'm on," said Sonny. "Do I wear a badge?" The sheriff tossed the makings across the desk to Sonny and dropped a curtain made of flower bags across the window, which arrangement let light into the office but prevented anyone outside from looking in. It was a typical office for a Western sheriff. Posters pinned untidily on the walls, describing men wanted, a calendar or two, a heap of dusty documents on the desk, a .4570 carbine in its saddle sheath in one corner, and two pairs of rusty handcuffs hung on a nail in the wall. You're sworn in, observed the sheriff. Now I'll tip you off on how to live bane a deputy sheriff in Helada. The first thing is never put your back to a door or a window that somebody can shoot through. The second is shoot first. The third is don't believe all you hear. Sounds right simple, conceded Sunny. But what's the situation? Generally, that calls for all them precautions. They'll tell you I'm rustling, said the sheriff grimly. Sunny blinked and looked up from the cigarette he was rolling. He studied the sheriff's face. His eyes dropped to the sheriff's hand, clenched fiercely upon the desk. And are ya? He asked. No, said the sheriff. His tone was quiet enough, but the knuckles of his hand whitened. The evidence against me is pretty good, just short of hangin' evidence. I'd believe it against anybody else. So folks are laying traps for me instead of the real rustlers, and they're getting right lawless. One or two of them have tried T-plug me. And when you get a deputy, said Sonny, folks figure you got him to help you rustle cattle instead of helping stop it. And his health gets poor, if not fatal. That's it, said the sheriff grimly. But you put on a pretty show of ridden gunpowder. Most folks like a good rider. Maybe they'll believe I slipped up in talking ya on. Maybe they'll help you catch them rustlers when they won't help me. Sonny twisted the end of his cigarette paper and put it in his mouth. He struck a match. But, he objected, I might be in town T produce some more evidence saying you was rustlin'. How do you know? I don't, admitted the sheriff, but if yer, I'll plug you as sure as God made lil' green apples. Sonny lit his cigarette and inhaled thoughtfully. I think, he said meditatively, this is going to be interestin', right interestin'. Bane, suspected, you can't find out anything. That's up T me. If I find anything against you, you'll plug me. If I find anything against anybody else, they'll try T plug me. He paused. Right interestin', sheriff, I'll mosey around and see what I can see. Go ahead, said the sheriff. I'll give you gunpowder and my share of the rewards for the rustlers if ya catch 'em. But if ya ain't in cahoots with 'em, you better not stand with your back to a door. Sonny went out, frowning thoughtfully. He stopped just outside the door and surveyed the town. Adobe houses, a few frame buildings with false fronts, and a whitewashed jail. That was the town of Helada. Now the town was burning up with heat. A red-hot sun glared down from a brazen sky. The Cowpenny's hitched before the Jackrabbit Saloon drooped beneath the glare. The horizon was rippling from the heat, and all the world was like an oven. Not the barest breath of breeze was blowing. Helada, murmured Sonny, meanin', froze, is what I'd call a kinda, sarcastic name for this town. He made his way toward the saloon, the fine alkali dust his feet kicked, uprising nearly to his knees. And me talkin' a chance like this, he added severely to himself, with all that reward out for me, just because of gunpowder and kinda lickin', that sheriff, it's foolish, but I never yet saw a man that clenched his fists while he was lyin'. He turned into the saloon and blinked in the sudden semi-darkness. A bald bartender polished glasses behind the bar. Flies buzzed somnolently. Against the ceiling, four cowpunchers with a marked family resemblance to each other and the man who had been trying to ride gunpowder that morning were lounging about a table. Sonny's features grew curiously hard as they looked at him, but no one gave a sign of recognition except Buck. Sonny waved his hand. Folks, he said pleasantly, meet your new deputy, sheriff. This here is the first town I ever rid into where anybody thought I was liable to stop trouble instead of starting it. The drinks are on me, will ya join me? There was a moment's hesitation. They looked at each other. Then Buck, still stiff from his fall from gunpowder, grinned. I reckon, he admitted, the drinks ought to be on me. You sure forked that hoss, stranger. Thank you, sir, said Sonny profoundly. As my step-great-uncle, late Secretary of the Interior in General Grant's cabinet, used T remark, the main thing in ridden a hoss is to stay on top. Here's how. He put down his glass. Where you from? Asked one of the four brothers abruptly. Heaven is my home, said Sonny, and I'm a long ways off. Right now, though, he added gently, I'm representin' the majesty of the law and say it was up to me to ask questions instead of answerin' M. The four brothers glanced at each other again. You'll last maybe a week, said one and buried his nose in his glass. Why? Sheriff'll shoot you, said another. And if he don't, began a third, Buck grinned again. Somebody else probably will. We're right curious, that way around here. There's rustlin' going on. Folks say it's Bane, directed from the sheriff's office. You got ambitions in the way of rustlin'? Not any, said Sonny with ironical bitterness. Holdin' up stages is my line, they say. I'm pretty good at that, though, to hear him tell it. Too bad, said Buck. If why don't help the sheriff drive off a few head, now and then he's likely T-plug ya. And if you do, somebody else is more than apt to sling some lead your way. Sonny smiled. When suggestin', he said gently, that I might consider. Rustlin' cattle, I'd be obliged if you'd smile, real much obliged. Buck grinned once more while the others scowled a little. I'm Smillin, said Buck. The four brothers rose. Reckon we'll be going, said one curtly. His eyes turned upon Sonny. S long in case we don't see you anymore. The others clattered out in his wake. Sonny frowned after them. Seems like I'd ought to know them fellers, he confessed, but they didn't know me. Who are they anyways? Name's Jackson, said Buck idly. Four brothers. Come here a year or two ago. Own the Double H Ranch and run it mostly by themselves. They run a couple thousand head, maybe more. Sonny frowned at his glass and twirled it absently in the wet spot it had made on the table. Say, he said suddenly, what have you folks got on the sheriff? He acted like a regular feller to me. Buck considered and regarded Sonny thoughtfully for a little while. He changed, I reckon, he said at last. Folks used to think a lot of him. But all of a sudden some rustling began that he couldn't never catch up. On, he seemed mighty vexed, he did, and rid his hoss hoofs off tryin', to catch him, it seemed like. But all of a sudden there was a kind of raid, on the Lazy L herds. Caldwell owns that ranch and he himself come on, his foreman shot plumb through the head with a .4570 bullet. And the sheriff is the only man in the county has a .4570 gun. See? Sonny nodded, twirling his glass thoughtfully. Then them Jackson fellers, said Buck. They lost 400 head pretty bad for them. They let one of their hand go, Ham Curtis, it was, he come in and he got a job deputy in, and a couple of weeks later the sheriff plugged him, said he was pesterin' a Mexican girl, the girl swore to it too, said that the sheriff was her preserver. But then the Jackson boys, they up and said that they'd turned Ham loose just to get that job and see if the sheriff was crooked, and they said Ham'd sent. M-word he had the goods on the sheriff, but he was shot before he could tell him anything. That looked kinda bad too, pretty bad, admitted Sonny. Pretty bad, and they found some rustled cattle onset in a lil canyon, Buck added, with nobody around but some fancy Brandon irons in a cabin, and a pair of the sheriff's all pants was in there, too. The sheriff, he said, he'd give him to a Mexican, but it looked rotten bad. Right bad, said Sonny dreamily, but I happen to know something. And so, Buck pointed out, nobody believes the sheriff is so awful, anxious to have them rustlers caught. The evidence against him bane in, cahoots with him ain't open and shut, but it's sure plentiful. And consequent, when he cottons to somebody, other folks look him over, careful. You, for instance, the sheriff swore he wouldn't never part with gunpowder, though he couldn't ride him. But when you blew in and rid him, why, the sheriff right away said he'd let ya have him. It looked like a setup, huh? Said Sonny shortly. Like I was one of that gang that come in and rid gunpowder for a grandstand play, for an excuse to take a deputy's badge, and me and the sheriff could pull off something real big in the rustlin' line. That's it, said Buck. He faced Sonny squarely. I kinda like the way you rid that hoss, if why don't like the way I talk. That's all right, said Sonny briefly. Does anybody know where gunpowder come from? No, said Sonny. He tapped on the table. If anybody asks about me, you seen tell them that I'm not only going after them rustlers, but I happen to know something that tells me right where to look. And I happen to know where gunpowder. There was a deafening explosion from the partition at the rear of the saloon. Sonny's hat jumped a little and settled back on his head, slightly askew. In one heartbeat from the noise of the explosion, and before the plaster the bullet dislodged had reached the floor, Sonny was out of his chair and racing for the cloud of smoke, a gun out and in his hand. Buck was slower, but he came plunging after with his own gun out and ready. There was a second explosion, a crashing, and a man plunged out and was running and dodging among the buildings of the town. Sonny stood deliberately in the doorway and sent six bullets after him. The fugitive rounded an adobe corner and vanished. Sonny blew the smoke from the muzzle of his gun. The sheriff didn't. Tell me any lie when he promised action, he observed. Look, go get that son of a gun, said Buck eagerly. Sonny shook his head. We couldn't pick him out, he said regretfully. He's sitting down amongst his freen, by now, his gun all reloaded, and they'll swear he was there all the time. But I would like to be real cert, he added meditatively, whether that feller shot at me because I said I knew where to look for the rustlers, or because I said I knew where gunpowder was stole from. Yep, reflected Sonny, it would be right interestin' to be positive. Night had fallen upon Helada. A full moon was sailing slowly upward in the eastern sky. The angular adobe dwellings and the still more ungainly wooden ones took on a fictitious beauty from its silver rays, and the dust and sagebrush that began abruptly at the edge of the town looked curiously inviting. Bright stars shone down. Far and far away a thin noise began, to which the dogs of the town responded spitefully. The coyote stopped, then began again, and the dogs barked once more. There, yapping changed its timbre as the plodding hoofbeats of a weary horse drew near and entered the village. The town was still, except for tinkling, jangling music from the jackrabbit honk-a-tonk. A dozen or more cowponies were hitched to its tethering rail, but there was little noise of festivity aside from the tune that went thinly out into the distant spaces. Sonny, in the sheriff's office, wrote by a dismal yellow lamplight. He was writing in a rather peculiar fashion. In the midst of the dust and disorder of the office, he held a pencil in his fist instead of his fingers, and he did not form letters in the usual fashion. He was printing laboriously upon a sheet of ruled paper torn out of a tablet. He was half smiling as he did so, and certainly there was no hesitation over the words or painful working of a protruded tongue such as the illiterate writer finds so helpful. Besides, Sonny seemed to be copying. A sheet of creased and greasy paper lay on the table before him. He was copying its crude capital letters, and if he did not combine them into the same words, he looked to his model for everyone. He stopped and compared his work with the original. There were certain small differences in the sense of the two, but the first lines were identical with the original, and one would have to read it through to note the difference. Footsteps sounded faintly in the dust outside. Weary, discouraged footsteps. Sonny thrust his copy in his pocket. He was rolling a cigarette when the sheriff came in. The sheriff was covered with dust. He was saddle weary, and there were grim lines on his face. "Howdy," said Sonny pleasantly. "A lot o' news since I saw you this mornin'," the sheriff grunted. "I'm kind of inclined," he observed grimly, "to advise you to move on. There ain't any use you stayin' here and get shot. There's goin' to be shootin' soon, with me on the receivin' end. I could have shot it out with four different men today. Caldwell of the Lazy, L in particular. He used to be a good friend of mine, but he's got me down for a rustler now, and when he believes that, there's goin' to be something doin'. You better stop deputyin' and go where the law is more popular." Sonny glanced at half a dozen envelopes on the table, the day's mail for the sheriff. One of them, Sonny had reason to believe from the postmark, would inform the sheriff that there was $1,000 reward for a certain Sonny Homan, dead or alive. He grinned faintly. "I'd hate tea go without gunpowder," he observed. "I like that hoss, sheriff. Sell him to me for cash?" The sheriff nodded and settled down heavily in his chair. He reached out for the mail. Sonny drew a roll of bills from his pocket. "Here's your cash," he said, carelessly thrusting the mail aside while he counted out the money. "Say, sheriff, you do mind telling me where you got him?" The sheriff smiled ruefully. "I'll give you a paper saying you bought him from me." "I bought him," he admitted, "from a Mexican. I kinda think he was stole some time or other, but he was too darn good to let stay in a greaser's hands. There was just a chance that the greaser come by him honest, though." "He was stole," said Sonny, "from a ranch up in Arizona." The sheriff paused, then held out the bills again. "You going to take him back?" "Not me," said Sonny, a deadly glitter coming into his eyes for a moment. "He belongs to my brother, my half-brother. And that jigger owes me something. I ain't going to tell you where the hoss belongs," he added quickly, "so you might's well sell him." "Oh, I'll give him to you," said the sheriff wearily. He looked up suddenly. "Why didn't I tell folks he was stolen? The way folks think about me if they knew I had a stolen hoss that would ha clinched things. I got a lot of respect for the law and all its officers," said Sonny, grinning. "I kinda think there's proof of it in the mail. Don't open that mail just yet, sheriff?" The sheriff stared at him. Sonny tossed over the greasy folded sheet of paper he had used as a model. "Found that on the table when I come in here this afternoon," he observed. "Read it." The sheriff picked up the sheet. He read it, and blank bewilderment showed on his features, then anger. Printed crudely was a note: "There's been some fellers scoutin' around too much like they had a hunch. It was the Jackson brothers. It's up to you and the sheriff to head them off. You better do something. We ain't sendin' the sheriff cash for nothing, and we got 600 head in the canyon we ain't been able to get across the border yet. You all better do something or there'll be a mess." "What's this here?" demanded the sheriff. "A joke, I kinda think," said Sonny deliberately. "It's intended to be a joke on me. It would kinda puzzle me ordinarily. But some feller shot at me today. Just suppose somebody found that in my pockets, wouldn't you kinda think they'd call it proof that you and me was in cahoots with a rustlin' gang somewhere?" "I would," said the sheriff grimly. "Where'd you get it?" "Somebody left it on the desk here," said Sonny. "I reckon they left it, the same time they stole your .4570 carbine." The sheriff jerked his head around to the rifle holster in the corner. It was empty. He clenched his fists. "Now," he said coldly, "somebody's goin' to be found plugged and that gun beside him. Then folks will come after me. You clear out right now. I'm going to pass out shootin', even if it is my best friends that are aimin' to hang me. You better get goin' pronto. Sonny stood up and nodded his head. You're a white man, Sheriff, he observed. I kind expect to leave tonight, but if things don't break, right I will, doggone if I don't come back and shoot it out alongside. Yeah, he held out his hand. The sheriff took it reluctantly. You'll be plumb foolish if you do, he said grimly. I aim to get right thorough perforated if folks come after me. I'm used to going after folks. I'm going, said Sonny, to talk to some fellers in the Jackrabbit. There's a kind of meeting there tonight. Ranch owners, you know, to sort of discuss this rustlin' business and settle on how to end it. They ain't invited me or you either, but I reckon I'll horn in. My step-great-uncle, late Secretary of the Interior in General Grant. Cabinet, he used T, say bashfulness was right cute, but it never made. Anybody president? He went out, slipping out of the narrowest possible opening of the door, and closing it instantly after him. It might have been merely a coincidence, of course, but he had offered a very poor target to anyone who might have been looking for one. His progress toward the Jackrabbit, too, was not the forthright stride of a man on the way to get a drink. His hand was always close to his hip. He clung to the shadows as much as possible, and he rounded no corner without having first peered before him. When he reached the brightly illumined saloon, however, he swaggered inside cheerfully. He went up to the bar and took the bottle the bartender offered. He poured with meticulous care. And then he asked, confidentially, got any objection to a lil shootin' in here? The bartender looked at him uneasily. What kind of shootin'? Folks or dice? Neither, said Sonny. Rustlers, most likely. He upended the glass. A sudden quietness had fallen in the saloon when he entered. There were many men in the place, nearly as many, it seemed, as had watched the riding of gunpowder. Most of them were eyeing Sonny, peculiarly. Every man had heard his exchange with the bartender. Here's some folks, said Buck, suddenly at Sonny's elbow, that like, to talk to you if why don't mind. Sonny turned with politeness, possibly excessive, but Buck's face was wholly friendly and Sonny smiled amiably upon the others. He saw two of the Jackson brothers glaring at him. Delighted T, meet the gentleman, drawled Sonny. I am always pleased, T, meet the representative citizens of a hustlin' little city. And though I only got here this morning, what we want to know, a deep voice boomed, is who are you and what do you intend to do about this rustling? Are you helping the sheriff or are you for us? A big man, 6 feet and more, sat astride a chair, barking at him. I'm for law and order and other desirable things, said Sonny politely. And if you folks pledge me your votes for public dog catcher. We aren't fooling, said the big man curtly. He was Caldwell of the Lazy L. We know enough about our sheriff to want to know about his deputies. Who are you? Where'd you come from? That's a kinda hint, admitted Sonny, but I got to disappoint you. I ain't a rustler, though. Stickin' up stages is said to be my line, like. I tall Buck and my friends the Jacksons this morning. But that's about all I got to say, Caldwell grunted. It might be healthier to speak up, he observed pointedly. Sonny smiled frostily and moved away from the bar toward the big man. One of the Jackson brothers moved uneasily to one side to give him room. Sonny seized him suddenly and held him by the shoulder. Freen Jackson, he said softly, I was thinkin' this mornin' that I'd seen you somewheres. Could you tell these folks about me? Jackson wrenched himself free and backed off. Sonny regarded him expectantly for a moment. Shucks, Jackson, said Sonny sorrowfully, do you think I'd tell on ya? He reached Caldwell's side and beamed on him. Buck struggled through the sullen crowd and joined him. I'm bettin' on ya, he told Sonny. Caldwell, I seen answer for one thing. This feller told me T-Day he had a hunch who the rustlers are, and right then somebody tried T-plug him, Caldwell grunted. Then let him tell us now. We got 1500 up, for the man who names those rustlers and proves it. Sonny grinned expansively. Stand aside, gentlemen, he called. I'll tell ya, 1500 bucks for the names of the rustlers is $250 a word. It only needs six to tell ya. Folks, the rustlers are. Bang, a window at the side of the saloon blew in. The thunderous report of a 45-70 carbine filled the saloon and Sonny clapped his hand stupidly to his chest and fell as a tree falls. Men stared for the fraction of a second, then rushed for the door. All. But Buck, he fought his way through a knot of men and leaped at the window with drawn gun. He crashed through it. Sonny lay still on the floor. The noise of a panic-stricken horse plunging violently sounded outside. Caldwell, the big man, heard sounds outside that told clearly of a rush for the spot where the marksman had stood. He bent over Sonny, but one of the Jacksons was first. He pushed his way to Sonny and knelt. Plumb through the heart, he panted excitedly. I bet the sheriff. Plugged him T, keep him from splittin'. He swore suddenly and stood up with a greasy paper in his hand. He glanced at it and swore again. "Listen to this," he shrilled triumphantly. "Listen here, there's been some fellers scoutin' around too much like they had a hunch. It was the Jackson brothers. It's up to Caldwell, this here is proof that this feller and the sheriff was in cahoots with them rustlers." He thrust the paper into Caldwell's fingers. "It's from the rustlers to him," he shrilled excitedly. "And it says that this feller and the sheriff got to keep me and my brothers from hunting for him any longer. It says the rustlers are paying the sheriff money. It says, if it ain't, proof this feller and the sheriff are in with that rustling gang, I'm a maverick." "Which," said a gentle voice from the floor, "is what why are, it don't, say nothing of the sort." Sonny rolled over and rose, his revolver inexplicably drawn and bearing, steadily upon Jackson. He scrambled to his feet, smiling frostily, with the muzzle of his gun never wavering from its aim. There was no sign of any injury upon him. "I'm calling on Mr. Caldwell to remember what you said was on that paper," added Buck softly. "I didn't like the first one, Jackson, so I writ another." A sudden uproar arose outside the saloon. Shoutings, curses, a sudden scuffle and a shot. "That Buck feller," observed Sonny cryptically, "he evident reads trails good when the sign's clear." Men began to pour back into the saloon, dragging one man with them and carrying another. The foremost bore a rent and shattered rifle, so shredded by some unknown force as to be recognizable only by its stock. Buck came with them, raging. "Plug in that feller," he raged, "from outside a winder, hell." He stopped short and swallowed, staring at Sonny, who nodded without, removing his eyes from the ashen face Jackson under his gun. "I'm right side up, Buck," he observed. "Much obliged, you sure did some. Quick thinkin', would ya mind talkin' this feller's gun?" Buck dazedly moved to obey, but paused as the sheriff stalked coldly into the saloon. "I heard shootin'," said the sheriff grimly. "You folks been fussin' with my deputy?" "Just a mite, sheriff," interposed Sonny. "Mr. Caldwell, judgin' by his expression, he's aimin' to read something aloud." Caldwell had read the note extracted from Sonny's pocket and had blinked over it, but the truth of its statements were already before him in the riven gun, one Jackson brother unconscious, another disarmed and raging, and a third ashen-faced before Sonny. "Am my God, sheriff," gasped Caldwell. "We came near making a mistake. Look here. This Jackson pulled this note out of this man's pocket and said it was proof that you and your deputy were acting for the rustlers, and it reads," he swallowed and read, "there's been some fellers scoutin' around too much like they had a hunch. It was the Jackson brothers. It's up to whoever finds this note to look him over right careful. One of them is wanted in Dues Almas for breaking jail and horse stealing, and one of them ought to be banged up some. He stole the sheriff's .4570 to shoot me with, and I've plugged up the barrel with mud. All of which," said Sonny pleasantly, "has turned out. There's the gun, you all heard the shot, and there's the feller banged up something scandalous. Did I hear somebody tumblin' to a few facts?" Men began to stir a little. Sonny waved his gun oratorically. "If somebody will take this hombre's gun," he said plaintively, "I'll speak my lil piece and move on. This feller here, he was in the same jail as me once when I was in for assaultin' and batterin' a feller I didn't like. He was in for hoss stealin'. And his brothers, they come and got him out of jail, leavin' me endurance vile. So when I saw him this mornin' and they pretended not to recognize me, why, I figured if there was any dirty work goin' on, they was in it. And after a lil while, one of them tried to plug me while Buck was sittin' talkin' to me. Somebody take his gun," he added, "because he's trying to get up nerve to pull it, and I'll hate to waste lead on him." Someone disarmed the third Jackson brother and clutched him firmly. Sonny replaced his gun and sighed. "Well," he said, "I reckon that explains it. When I said I knew who the rustlers was, one of them who was listening, he tried to plug me. It'd got kinda necessary for them to see me buried by then, and to keep from spoiling folks' belief that it was the sheriff who was in with the rustlers, why, they went and grabbed the sheriff's gun to plug me with. They didn't have time to go back to their ranch for the .4570 days, got out there. I figured they'd want to use the sheriff's gun, so I went, and I got me a lil piece of mud, and I poked it down the barrel. Filled it plumb up, I did. You came here," boomed Caldwell, "and made a target of yourself so the gun would burst." "Precisely, sir," said Sonny. "You are a gentleman and a scholar, sir." Caldwell of the Lazy L turned to the sheriff with a rather red face. "Tom," he boomed, "I'm a derned fool and I admit it. I apologize for thinking what I thought, and I'll shoot any man who repeats anything I've said about you. There you are, shake hands." The sheriff gravely took his old friend's hand. Other men crowded about him, but he raised his voice. "Look here, fellers," he called. "We got three of these Jackson fellers, but we want to get the fourth, and we still got to sweat out of them where they hid out the cattle." "Who? Common, get your animals, boys." The saloon emptied instantly, the men angry at the Jacksons and rather ashamed of themselves. They would make up to the sheriff later for their suspicions of him. Caldwell lingered a moment. "Wait a minute, Tom," he boomed. "I'm going with you. First, I want to take your deputy away. Want a better job than you've got?" he demanded of Sonny. "No, thanks," drawled Sonny. "I resigned. I'm moving on." "You can pick your own job out at my ranch," boomed Caldwell. "I need men who can use their heads. What's your line?" "Like I told ya," said Sonny, smiling faintly. "Right now, though, it ain't so. I'm renowned for sticking up stages. Seriously, sir, I'm moving on." The sheriff turned to Buck. "I'm deputizing you, Buck," he observed, "too. Look after these here prisoners until I get back." He handed an envelope to Sonny. "I ain't read that," he said firmly. "Not a word of it. There ain't no need for you to hurry." "I'll be moving," said Sonny gratefully, "but I'm much obliged." "Go to blazes," said the sheriff gruffly. "Them miners ruin the country anyways." He swung out of the saloon. There was a yipping and yelling, and the highly impromptu posse set off. Sonny rolled a cigarette and lighted it with care. "Say," said Buck. "You ain't really leaving?" "Yep." Sonny tossed over the envelope the sheriff had given him. "That, there's a right good likeness." Buck frowned, but Sonny nodded for him to open it. Glaring type showed, $1,000 reward. Beneath was a picture of Sonny. Holding up stage robbing payroll of Aztec Mine, assaulting manager. Buck blinked and drew back. "What you givin' me?" he demanded. "This, ain't you?" "Sure is," said Sonny. He sighed faintly. "I had a uncle, a old desert rat. He found that their Aztec mine. Filed on it, and the Aztec people. Jumped him, they shot him, by the way, trying to get him off. It was dirty, but it was legal. Everybody'll admit that. And so, well, my half-brother got some of it back with a gun and a mask. That was okay. Only he planted some evidence what hung the deadwood on me. I'm kinda looking for that hombre." Buck stared, and then he said emphatically, "Well, I'm sure glad I ain't him. Got plenty of grub, need some blankets, extra gun? Anything I seen do tea help ya?" Sonny grinned and took his hand. "Nothing, thanks," he said. "I'll be ridden gunpowder and trailin' my other cayuse behind. Maybe I'll come back this way sometime. Meantime, I'll be driftin' and lookin', haste a la vista." He turned and went out of the saloon. A little later, Buck left his prisoners to take care of themselves while he went to the door. Sonny was coming out of the livery stable corral, mounted on gunpowder. And gunpowder was bucking madly and plunging and trying every trick known to the equine race for unseating his rider. He fought his way down the single street of Helada and out into the moonlit distance. The other horse followed patiently. "And there's $1,000 reward for him," murmured Buck, "alive or dead." He felt of himself where gunpowder had thrown him that morning. "Well," said Buck, "if that hoss don't collect the reward, there sure ain't nobody else is likely to." Transcriber's note: this story appeared in West Magazine, February 5, 1926. It is believed to be in the public domain in the United States, copyright. Status may differ in other countries. End of the project. GUTNBRGEBOOK Sonny asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed, creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM, concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start. Full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work. or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg, you agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E81B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1E1. The following sentence, with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license, must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works. Posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work, 1, E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg, 1, E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the project. Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1. F2. Limited warranty, disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work; b, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work; and c, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org. Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair, NJ 7042, USA, +1 862-621-9288. Email contact links and up to date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the project. Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.